Welcome back to the NoFX podcast. Once again, I am joined by my co-host Kirk. I'm Islane, if you don't know. We're back with another episode that is similar to one we did two episodes back, I believe. Anyhow, we're doing another deck tech because, well, it performed pretty well. It seems like people were interested in hearing more about the ins and outs of decks, why we built them, all that good stuff, rather than just going on and on about lists. You know, if we were, you know, doing this podcast maybe 10 years ago-ish, you know, there would only be like 3-4 sets a year, so we'd only be doing set reviews that many times. Instead, we're doing them every other episode, it seems. So obviously that's all content. Right. Content is still good. I still like talking about the stuff because we do seem to highlight cards that other people that are doing the same sort of content don't. So, you know, that's cool. It's more stuff for other people to consider. But anyways, this time I'm going to be the guy that kind of gets this introduction done and then ask some questions about that guy's deck. Because, well, after we did the one for me, I had said, well, you know, next time we do this, didn't think it was going to be so soon, but we said, you know, next time you'll do one, you pick a list that you want to feature and we'll go. Well, then this guy built a list and it way outperformed what anybody probably would have imagined. He holds the channel's record for most wins in a single episode / stream. So, yeah, it seemed worth featuring and talking about. And it's also from the newest set. We've already talked about it in the set review a little bit. And we kind of sort of knew what it did. But now Kirk has definitely got a lot more experience playing it and winning with it and all that good stuff. So we're going to just jump right in. We don't have any housekeeping, I don't believe. So right into the deck tech. So this one is Kirk's deck that is Stella Lee, the wild card. Just in case you are not aware, Stella Lee, the wild card, is a 2/4 legendary creature human rogue that costs one generic blue and a red. And it says, whenever you cast your second spell each turn, exile the top card of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. So it's impulsive draw that sticks around for at least a turn cycle. And then she can be tapped, and you can copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You can choose new targets for the copy, and you can only activate this if you've cast three or more spells this turn. Meaning, cast a spell, cast a second spell, you get the third spell from exile, cast that, copy it, whatever the case may be. So that's the commander, and then I've got some kind of pointed questions here that we'll ask. The deck, prior to us even talking about it, was kind of hyped up by the community. I saw it on Twitter and Reddit and other places. People were talking about it. People were excited. It was hyped up, so to speak. Besides, like, the FOMO or, you know, just wanting to build the thing because everybody wants to build the thing, why were you drawn to building this in the first place?
The biggest draw for me, I love Izzet. Izzet has always been one of my favorite color pairings. I love blue, I love red. It's got the I was a merfolk player back in the day when I was playing Legacy a lot. It's kind of that tempo control spell slinger style that I absolutely love. Just something about it. A side note of all this, I like the Old West stuff. I like Wild West kind of stuff. And so that kind of also fit the theme for this Thunder Junction thing. And just, I don't know, it just appealed to me. I like a 3-mana commander in Izzet that is obviously way more powerful than we anticipated, but it just really appealed to me. I like the card. I like the artwork. I like the mechanic. And I thought, what the hell? I'll give it a shot. I've been playing a lot of Kedis and Malcolm as my other Izzet deck that I played quite a bit. I back in the day, I played the red-blue Joyra, the cast an artifact, draw a card one.
The eggs one. Yeah.
If it's an Izzet commander pairing, I've probably dabbled in it. I've built lists and played so many different ones.
And all that shit. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Niv-Mizzet. I've played Jeska and Krom. I've played the Locust God, believe it or not. I played a bunch of different
ones. I used to play the Locust God. I love that deck, but I kind of got away from it after what was that snake teamer snake Zyrus. That would like I swapped over to that because I got green and could do some other different shit. But some other
busted stuff. Yeah. I've even played even the background pairing, the Karlach and the blue one that if an opponent has more life, it can't be blocked. I can't think what the hell that's called.
Sorko Sailor.
That one. I've even played that as a pairing in CDH. So I played a lot of weird and fun and kind of offbeat Izzet commanders. So anytime I see a possibly viable Izzet commander, I'm always kind of taking a look at it. I was going to build Vadrick, I believe his name is, the one that cares about day and night and makes your stuff cheaper. I was going to build that. I was kind of looking at him. And then Stella Lee came out, and I thought, you know, this seems a little bit more my kind of style, so I built this instead.
I know the answer to this, but would you say that this is more, you already said, you know, or alluded to it being spell slinger, so having counter spells and other things, but would you say this is more focused like a turbo combo, or more like mid-range, or more control, or maybe has the ability to pivot between the two?
It can certainly pivot because you're playing blue, so you have counter magic, but it definitely skews more in the turbo lane than it does any of the rest, which is not really my style. I'm not usually a turbo player, no. But I am having a blast playing this. And it really comes down to I'm not an Adnaz player. I love Adnaz. I play it in decks. It's just I don't ever gravitate toward Adnaz decks. That's just not really my style. And part of that kind of might lean itself to the fact that for, I don't even know, the better part of 9 years of playing just casual EDH, I would always power down decks just to make sure that I was on the same level as all my playing group. And just, I love finding janky, weird combos to win with. So I was always maybe avoiding the super busted spells during that time. So then when I started kind of taking the training wheels off and just letting my deck building and deck playing go wild and do whatever I want, go wild. I just always have gravitated toward, I like mid-range more than I do Storm, but I like Izzet. And the nice thing about Stellae when compared to like a Krark and a Sakashima style deck is
no random bullshit.
While your turns can be a little bit longer than, you know, your average, anytime you're playing a Storm type turn, you're going to be taking a little bit of time, obviously. But it's not like you're drawing or revealing a card off of an assault of an Adnaz and losing life and then deciding to continue, or flipping a coin. You know, you're right. Literally, when you get to the combos for this, you're literally like just drawing cards. Draw a card. There's take an action, draw a card, take an action, draw a card. So right. Even the Storm turns of it are relatively fast. Also not super complicated to resolve. They can get a little bit that way depending on the board state, but that's what I like about it. It's a very straightforward combo. It's not hard for your opponents to understand what's going on when you explain it to them, which is also kind of nice. And it wins, which is also great.
Well, I mean, that was my next question, which I guess that's the tagline. So I was going to say, you know, what's the tagline? How would you sell someone on this deck? And it wins. That's all you got to say, right? But I mean, to that point, so you're saying it's kind of more leaning towards turboing into your combo, but does have, obviously, counterspell backup and things. You're not in white, though, so you don't have, you know, Silence or Grand Abolish or anything else. Is there anything you can do besides holding up counter magic to, like, kind of protect your combo if you do get there faster than other people? Or you're worried about the guy that's got the Rhystic or Mystic or whatever that's going to draw cards off what you're doing?
So there's a couple of different areas I want to answer on that one. So number one, to bluntly answer the question, there's two things you can do to pseudo-protect your combo. One, I do currently play Defense Grid, although it is something I'm considering chopping. We'll see.
It's risky, but it also, going to win, it just lets you win, right?
Yep. You cast it. Your opponent has to.
Well, unless they have a fuck ton of mana, like I guess maybe they can get an answer in. So it isn't complete silence, but it's the best thing you can get at when you're not in white, I guess.
Yep, and there are Boseijus and Otawaras and whatnot, but right. It definitely is one of those, you cast it and your opponents look at it pretty hard on the stack and think, I have two options here. I either have to have the shitloads of mana, one of the channel cards to stop me, or they have to counter it, or they have to try and kill my commander in response. So those are kind of their avenues of options. So the reason I'm actually, it's on the fence of whether I'm going to keep it or not, is Stellae is a combo deck that can win at instant speed extremely easily. That's the other thing. You can pseudo-protect your combo by going off over the top of another player's combo. Similar like some decks like Magda, for instance, is very famous about being able to combo off on top of an opponent's combo attempt to win. And this can do a very Magda-esque impersonation of that. It can very easily win over the top of another opponent. So,
yeah, I mean, somebody casts an Adnaz, and then next player goes, well, I'm going to counter that, puts the counterspell on the stack, so you know Adnaz is leaving, and there's a counterspell gone, and then you're like, I'm just going to do my thing now.
Wham, bam. Yep.
Decks that can do that are great. I mean, that is one of the strengths of Adnaz lists, is that it is an instant and you can do it at somebody's instep and then sculpt a perfect seven to win, or, you know, at least have a final fortune in your hand to take another turn, blah, blah, blah. And there aren't a lot of decks that you can do the instant speed win. because a lot of creatures that have activated abilities say activate only as a sorcery. Now, granted, she does have that clause of three or more spells in the turn, but obviously you can cast instants and, you know, there's dumb shit that's a one mana cantrip and then another one mana cantrip. You get your fucking exile card, you cast it, you start copying, bam, bam, done and done. Or you get your trigger for that and then cast your, you know, mystical tutor or whatever to put what you need on top to then go for a win. So yeah, there's some lines. I mean, I know I've seen the deck more than I like as far as being able to win and not being able to do shit about it. So, and I think this is something that's relevant for anybody that's going up against this deck. Now, obviously Kirk's list is going to be potentially a little bit different than anybody else's, but I would suggest if you're going into a pod, you know that guy's going to be playing Stella, probably run some stacks, Rule of Laws, or Damping Sphere even. You know, anything that can keep it from just going ham is going to help you. Now, granted, I know stacks has kind of gone out of favor a bit, but decks like these and, you know, new commanders getting printed all the time, Modern Horizons 3 is coming, it's probably going to have some busted shit. The pendulum goes back and forth. You know, we had Turbo Ad Nauseless like crazy, and then stacks started coming in, and then mid-range kind of combated stacks. It's rock, paper, scissors, really. And now we're right in the mid-range thing right now, but Turbo may start making a comeback, which means stacks makes more of a comeback, and then, you know, mid-range falls out of favor, blah, blah, blah. So knowing your meta and your pod composition, I mean, obviously, most of the time when you sit down at a table, you don't know what everybody's playing until they flip it or they say, this is what I'm playing, but... You know, I've already said, again, if I know that Kirk's going to be playing this shit, I'm playing a stacks deck. This is all there is to it.
One other, to address another piece of your question earlier as well, the other beauty of this versus a lot of other Storm decks, like a Karkin, Sakashima, or even Adnaz decks, etc., when you attempt to combo off to win, oftentimes you're playing three spells and then either attempting to win or drawing the majority of your library, casting nothing else. So I have played this into Rhystic Studies and Mystic Remora decks where, you know, they're playing that and they're thinking, you know, the typical Storm deck mindset against those is, shit, I have to remove that or they're going to just draw an immense amount of counter magic to be able to prevent my, you know, my win attempt at the end of this, all right? Or because I'm not in white, I don't have a Silence, I don't have a Grand Abolisher, etc.
Yep.
This deck, because you only have to literally cast three spells to then be able to activate Stella Lee, you can easily either pay for Rhystic Studies or play around Rhystic Study, or just go into it, jam into it. If you give them two cards, one card, your odds of them drawing what they need aren't much different than if you start at the turn and they draw none. I mean, certainly one card, two card drawn is more than none, but that's the nice thing. You're not casting an astronomical shit ton of cards to then try and go for the win. And if you get to the point where you've cast your third spell and then you can start activating Stella Lee and they're not able to respond to stop you at that point, you've either won because you've cast one of your win cons that doesn't require any other actions other than copying it forever, or you can draw your deck and then you will draw enough free counter magic, free interaction that it doesn't matter what the hell they're holding, you're going to be able to power through it.
I'm looking at the list and you're not on like Isa Rev, which doesn't necessarily make sense for the deck as I know it, but I don't recall, even though I've played against it a bit, do you have ways to make infinite mana to where you could potentially pay for the Mystics, Rhystics, and all that shit?
So one of the gross things about Stella Lee, and one of the reasons you don't need ISO Rev in the deck, even though I am playing Dramatic Reversal. So Isochron Scepter, for those that don't know, and if you don't know, I don't know why you're listening to our podcast, but if you don't know, it's a two mana spell, an artifact. It enters the battlefield, you exile an instant or sorcery with CMC 2 or less. I think it's instant, maybe not even sorcery. Instant,
it's CMC both, 2 or less. I believe. I think it's both.
Anyway, either way, you tap two mana, colorless mana, tap it, or two generic mana. It doesn't have to be colorless. Two generic, tap it. Cast the spell that's exiled, right? If in theory you need mana rocks that can produce three mana rocks dorks that can produce three to then be able to tap and untap those, blah, 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 and you go crazy, you get your infinite mana, do your thing.
It is only an instant, to be clear, which makes sense because, you know, it's got it's an artifact with no, you know, summoning sickness or timing restrictions, so yeah, it should be an instant.
With Stella Lee, you need one artifact that can produce mana, preferably mana of any color, like red or blue in this instance. Again, if it's just colorless, there are things you can do with that also.
Stone is
yeah, but if you have an Arcane Signet, you have a Mox Diamond, you have anything like that in play, if your third spell or if you cast three spells and then you cast Dramatic Reversal, you can tap solely with Dramatic Reversal on the stack, copy the Dramatic Reversal, it will resolve, the copy will, untapping Stella League, your mana rock, with the original still in the stack, you tap Stellaly, you copy it, you tap your mana rock in response, you float a color of mana.
You did that in a game. Yeah, I'm remembering that now. So is there a reason you're not running Kitten to potentially do similar types of things, to blink mana rocks to get extra triggers to get to the Stellaly activation, or just to flicker mana rocks to have more mana?
So the crazy thing about Stellaly is her combo lines are so thin on mana. They're just so low costed. And that's why we play a lot of the one mana or free mana spells or free cantrips. Sure. You don't need a bunch of mana to go off. And there's not a whole lot of creatures. So when I built this deck, I initially started it with crazy low creature count. And I love to do when I'm building decks is I'll build a list how I think it seems great. And then I'll say, okay, here's what I think I've got. I'll play test it a few on Moxfield,
goldfish
a few times, and I'll say, this seems great. Now let's go see what other people have either figured out or what they're doing. And initially when I built my list, I was looking, a lot of the other decks that have been out there that had a lot of views had a lot, like maybe double to triple the creature count that I did. And I already knew, I'm like, I don't want to go that route. You don't need that. That doesn't seem like a deck that needs it.
I mean, this could be built in a mid-range sort of sense or control sort of sense. Some people might also lean into the impulsive draw and like that as an ability, sure, for card advantage. But yeah, I see where, at least knowing the way your deck works to a certain degree, I see where I agree with the way you're doing it. Although I might run a few more creatures, I can see an argument for Kitten, but it's hard because you don't get three fairy. And I don't know if there's any other options in these colors, but if nothing else, you can at least cast a spell and flicker Dockside and get more shit.
You don't really need a lot of mana to go off.
Pause there for 1 second. The next question I had was, what were the deck strengths? And we basically have covered most of them. It can win at instant speed. It's pretty resilient. You can just decide to draw half your deck and then just sit on it and, play control or whatever until you're ready to actually win. Now, what would you consider maybe some of the weaknesses? Because, like, for instance, I'm seeing this as a weakness. You've built the deck in a way, in a lot of turbo decks, unless you're kind of like doing the farm thing with Timna and Bruce or Timna Jeska or Timna Rograk, or even some of my other Atnaz decks are like Krom Tevesh, where it's just like, it is a turbo Nos list, but it's also, I can pivot into, I have two draw engines in the command zone, and I'm just going to grind it out until I find my tutors and I find my wins. So it does have that ability, and I know this can grind too because you have control and whatever, but what happens when you run into that Stax deck that's on the Beats plan, and you only have five creatures in the deck, six if you count your commander? Kind of hard to block that much, if five, six creatures are coming at you every turn. And maybe you can throw, all of your creatures. You got Ragavan, Dockside, Spellskite, Simeon Spirit Guide, which you're not going to cast as a creature, so it's really only five creatures total, and Spellseeker. So you've got an 0-4 and your Stella 2-4 as your best blockers. The other stuff here dies to Spellseeker and Ragavan, both die to a single Bowmaster trigger. Dockside dies to two. Spellskite, you've already proven, as have other people, that it's pretty good against Bowmasters, but so the question stands. I see that as a potential weakness. You can answer how you feel that you combat that, but then also if there's any other weaknesses you found in your playtesting.
So the way to combat that particular scenario that you're talking about, it's twofold. It's you go faster than they can develop a board that beats the crap out of you that's going to win.
I also said, if we're going to play, a Yasharn or like Joey's Sisse, the green white one, or any my Sithis, my Minx, like a lot of decks that I play just incidentally play a lot of Hate Bears or play Rule of Laws. You have that sort of scenario where they stop you from being able to turbo and then can kill you. So, obviously you have counter spells and removal and stuff, but continue.
So much to unpack there. Where to start? So, number one, you go faster than they can establish the kind of board presence that's going to matter.
That's plan number one, right?
That's plan one. Plan two, not being an Adnaz deck, not being into Necropotence and other decks.
They're not going to attack.
Life is not a resource for me that I care about. I can win on one or I can win on 30. I can draw my deck entire library on one life or I can draw my entire library on 40 life. Life isn't a resource that I'm using for anything other than to maybe cast a couple of Phyrexian spells, Phyrexian mana spells, like
Ancient Tomb and Fiery Islands and City of Brass and Mana Confluence. Yep. And yeah, that's about it. Fetch lands. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm getting punched in the mouth with this one. While doesn't matter, you're not using your life for a resource other than those exact instances. You're redirecting something to Spellskite, or you're paying mana and paying life, which the beatdown plan, if it's a big beatdown full of stacks creatures, luckily we're in a meta where I'm not the only deck that doesn't like to see those. Yeah. So I'm also going to count on the other black decks that are playing Toxic Deluge to kill them. The other decks that are playing Swords to Plowshares or the whatever it is
Fallout
to kill those.
And whatnot.
Exactly. I am playing bounce spells. So I'm playing, obviously I'm on Chain of Vapor, which is a weird one for this deck, which I want to go into really quick. But Cyclonic Rift, Chain of Vapor. I'm also on Repeal. So I've got ways to bounce it. I'm on Pyrokinesis. I'm on Lightning Bolt. A lot of the removal for this, and one of the weaknesses for this deck, is it's a commander-centric deck, so Dranith Magistrate needs to die.
Yeah, so that, and that also shuts off your Impulsive Draw, too. And yep, you're also exactly on Breach, which, you know, we didn't talk about in Strengths, but the Breach LED and the Brain Freeze combo is an easy win if you have to pivot into that grind game. You just have to hope you don't exile one of the pieces with her early to where you can't have it as a backup, but... And again, Stella Lee does exile, and they're just gone if you don't cast them.
Sure. And again, though, we're in a world where if somebody else is playing a Dranith, my opponents are probably trying to kill it just as much as I am, which is great. Yeah. And my commander costing 3 mana, she does usually come down by turn 2.
And that's 4 butt. Mana rock that we 4 do. Butt is huge because we played a game recently where Bowmasters went at it and just couldn't get there because there just wasn't enough people drawing enough cards to hit the 4. If you can get her a ping on her or whatever and then have a bolt, great. And then otherwise, you know, obviously there's swords and other, you know, black removal spells that just straight kill it. But
so another resilience and another strength for the deck is if I'm attempting to combo off and somebody's trying to stop my combo, not by countering one of the spells I'm casting that I'm trying to copy, but by trying to remove Stella, I do play multiple cheap or free untap spells. For instance, the two that that are going to look weird to a lot of people that haven't played this type of deck before. Tidal Bore, it's 1 blue and 1. It's an instant. You may return an island you control to its owner's hand rather than paying its mana cost. Tap or untap target creature. So if I'm attempting to combo off, I tap Stella Lee to copy the third spell on my stack, which we'll get into what those are. Mm-hmm. Somebody attempts to kill Stella Lee in response, I can cast this to untap Stella Lee and go over the top of their trying to kill her.
Yeah.
There's another one that's Shore Up. It's in the deck. It's 1 blue mana. Target creature you control gets +1/+1, gains hexproof until end of turn, untap it. Yeah, it can also be a weird way to kill one opponent with this deck as well, because if this happens to be your third spell, you can target Stella Lee, tap Stella Lee to copy Shore Up, untap Stella Lee, she gets +1/+1 bigger, tap her with the stone stack, wash, rinse, repeat until you have an infinitely, you know, a 5 billion and 2 Stella Lee and attack somebody. So you can kill one person if they don't have any blockers. Not super relevant, but if I do get against the stacks deck that's not playing Rule of Law stacks, if they're playing something else,
Like Sithis, I don't run Rule of Law because I'm looking for a storm turn to win the game most of the time. Sure. Or there are a couple 2-card win cons, obviously, but yeah, there is that potential to storm, so I don't play it. If they do, they'll play like their creature base, like a Naya creature deck. They'll play Deafening Silence because they don't give a fuck because they're going to play creatures and just win that way. But it also turns off the turbo deck. So yeah, I'd say Rule of Law and Dranith are definitely the biggest things that hate on this deck. I brought up the combat thing as a potential weakness. You've already kind of answered how you can kind of get around that. Is there anything else that you outside of, you know, losing to hard stacks, like Back to Basics, maybe? I mean, you're on one of each basic, which, you know, Back to Basics, that could still hurt. Obviously, Oof. Absolutely. and other artifact hate, the Dismantler and Blind Obedience, all those types of things can hurt. But those aren't like hard stops. You know,
those kind
like
of cards aren't affecting me nearly as bad as they are most of my opponents. Now,
also, Blood Moon doesn't hurt you too bad because you're on red. So,
yeah, Cursed Totem hurts a little bit, taking away my creature abilities. So, Cursed Totem, I'm not a big fan of. But
isn't there a creature version of Cursed Totem?
There's Linvala and Dragon.
Yeah, there you go.
But again, those both cost 4 mana, and they're not going to be most likely in their command zone.
There is another creature that I think is interesting and maybe a potential add. Or something you could potentially put on your considering. It's that Kitesail Larcenist, I believe it is, came out in a couple sets back. And it's basically the Grasp of Fate, but it's a creature and it's got Flash, I believe.
If I see a rise in stacks decks in general, it's definitely something to consider. Right now,
it was just a thing I thought of that's an answer for that particular problem. And it's not something that's really available otherwise in your colors.
They just gave us one of the strongest rule of laws they've ever printed, and I still have yet to run into that card out in the wild playing.
Because Boros, man. I put it in my Winota list because that runs all the rule of laws it can, and that's great. But all of my other rule of law decks are not on red. I like stacks. I enjoy playing stacks. I think it's a fun thing to, you know, kind of combat some things. But again, it's kind of fallen out of favor, and mid-range doesn't give a fuck about stacks. They're just like, yeah, cool. I will play a thing, pass, and then I will... And I will just Thrasios Activation in, with my Seaborn Muse out and not give a fuck. So, yeah, I mean... Yep.
Or eventually they get to the point where they're like, Holebreaker Horror, cast a spell, bounce your rule of log, do their thing, and that
Polymorph can, and whatever, absolutely. Yeah. So
some of the bounce spells that are pretty cool in this, like Chain of Vapor, and to some extent, and also Repeal, are awesome, because as we all know, Chain of Vapor can be removal for your opponent's scary permanent
or bounce your Dockside
land, and yeah, you can bounce your Dockside, exactly. But the also the great thing about Chain of Vapor and Repeal in this deck, Repeal is one blue and X, bounce target spell or target permanent non-land permanent CMC X or less, I think, to its owner's hand and draw a card. A lot of times I'm going to be targeting one of my own zero drop mana rocks or one drop mana rocks, bounce those to hand, play those, boom, that's my second spell for the turn, so I get my Stellar trigger to exile the top card of my library, which is hopefully just the value piece at that point, because I've got the win in hand or whatever, so...
And, I mean, your curve is pretty low. You're on 1.4. I mean, I've seen quite a few Adnos lists that are, even some of my own, that are lower, like 1.2 or whatever, but that's still pretty low. Total mana value of the deck is 142, so, I mean, that's...
And that's not keeping bad. In mind... I'm playing Seagate Restoration, which is a
doesn't
seven
count, right?
Yep, I'm playing the Lorien Revealed, which I have cast in this deck multiple times and even copied, believe it or not. But it's in there to be a one mana cycle for an island. So
if you need it, yeah,
you've got Forces and Mindbreak Traps and Force of Negations and things that are sure they're castable, but they're typically free. Pyrokinesis is a six drop; it's typically free. So this is another one where the 142, if you cast every spell in the deck, you're probably not paying anywhere near that. So
yeah, it's probably closer to like 100-110 maybe. Before we move on to the next question, is there any other specific weakness that you found for an estimate, like how many games do you think you've played with it so far?
I can tell you exactly. I played I think it's 24 games with her so far with this deck. I am 12-24, so I'm 12 wins out of 24 games. I'm 50% win rate with it, which it's fallen
amazing.
A lot. Last week I went on a bad tear of losing. Before that, it was even more ridiculous than that, believe it or not. Yeah. So.
No, I mean, I know, because I saw you do a lot. Speaking of, I mean, it's not really spoilers, because the video has been out for over a week now, but we did, it is actually featured on this deck list, which will be in the show notes here, and also I will link to the video that we played a couple weeks back. Kirk played this list, and just absolutely shit all over us and won three games in a row, which again is the record. So we'll link to that video as well, so you can kind of see what it can do. Again, it wins, so like, what more do you need to say? Just to put a button or a bow on this question before we move on to the next, any other particular things where you're like, a blatant weakness that maybe you feel you can shore up a little bit?
There are two weaknesses as well that we haven't talked about. One of them is definitely a weakness because of the intended win con of the deck, and that's Bowmasters. Granted, I play specific cards for that, like even in my Grasping Dunes, my land spot is there because Bowmasters exists.
What is Grasping Dunes?
Grasping Dune is a colorless mana. It comes into play untapped. It's a land desert. Taps for colorless. You can pay one and tap and sack it. Put a -1/-1 counter on target creature, activate as a sorcery only.
That is fucking sweet anti-Bowmaster tech right there.
Right? Because... effing Bowmasters.
I mean, sucks that you're not in colors that really can tutor for that. I mean, I guess you could run Expedition Map if you really wanted to, which you probably don't, but you know, that is a way you could do it. But even that, just being in other decks where you could potentially just crop rot for it to get rid of the Bowmaster or whatever, that's pretty spicy.
It's not bad. There's also the red land, I can't think of what it's called, not Cephalid Coliseum, that's
the Barbarian Ring.
Yeah, where you can play a red
threshold
and damage.
Yeah, it taps for a red and deals a damage or two. Yep. I think it's damage to you. And it's then when you have threshold, you can sack it to ping something for two. There's also the black one, Cabal Pit, I believe, that gives a neg two.
Yep. Yeah. But in this deck, I've considered playing Barbarian Ring, but I have been surprised with how well I can win over the top of a Bowmaster. Another weakness for this deck a little bit can be Shieldred, because you see that seeing more play now in like Talion decks and other stuff. But again, I can win over the top of all of those triggers, which we can get to.
You also said earlier too about, you know, the Rhystics and the Mystics and things that you can potentially make infinite mana to not care.
Even with those, with not even making infinite mana, I mean, if I'm only giving them, if I'm winning, I might be casting somewhere in the neighborhood of six cards after I've drawn my deck after playing three, probably. So I probably have counter magic to combat whatever three cards I give them. But anyway, go on.
You would hope. All right. My next question we have kind of already addressed a little bit, but we'll just ask it anyway, so you can give me kind of a cut and dry answer. You said that you brewed it initially, and then you started looking around and you saw some differences. So do you think that your list differs much from what the quote unquote average Stellar Lee deck list would be?
I think the more I've looked at them now, because I just looked before we started this podcast just to kind of see, we've all kind of settled out to, I don't know, they're probably all within 15-ish cards of each other.
And all kind of leaning towards the turbo, like you've seen less of the mid-range.
There are definitely ones that are slightly skewed more toward mid-range, but it seems like a lot of them are skewing more toward the turbo route for sure. Okay.
That, I guess, that kind of leads me into another question. You could be on Imposter Mech, but also why are you just not on Clones?
It's a good question. The reason I'm not, I think all of our win cons really don't use creatures for anything. So yeah. If I'm playing a clone to get one Bowmaster trigger and then just kind of having it out there and I'm not utilizing it in any other way other than the occasional small pings, I don't think it's good enough. Copying a Dockside, getting a big mana burst, while that can be super powerful in a lot of decks, that's not really what this deck is kind of skewing toward.
Yeah.
So the clone, I mean, it's definitely an idea and it's not bad to try.
I mean, I see a lot of uses for it. For a long time, I didn't run clones in many decks. Like, at most, I would run maybe Fimage. And I'm at the point now where it's like, it's Phantasmal Lineage, it's Flesh Duplicate, Phyrexian Metamorph, so you can copy a One Ring. It's the Imposter Mech, and they all have their pros and cons, but they all are going to get you something that you're going to want. And I've actually kind of moved away from shit like Gilded Drake because I can just copy your thing and I don't really care about stealing it most of the time.
Phyrexian Metamorph is one I've considered just because copying a One Ring is pretty busted. Addressing Bowmaster specifically, playing the removal I play is there so I can kill it if I know it. And if I suspect an opponent has it, the play is to try and combo off, leaving at least one blue and one mana of any color available. Because if I can do that, and I'm comboing off and they flash in a Bowmaster, I can just win over the top of every single one of their triggers on the stack, so I don't care, because of dramatic reversal. Phyrexian Metamorph is definitely something I've considered. The biggest problem with it is the One Ring is something I'd want to copy. Bowmaster, I could use it as a removal, but I'm not really trying to go that route. So then what am I left copying? I could copy a Prom, which would be okay. A Timna, I don't have the creatures to take advantage of that. And if they're casting a Ranger Captain, I'm more worried about it stopping me than me using it to protect my opponent's turns.
Sure.
If they've cast a Grand Abolisher, we're probably already dead. You know how it goes. Sure. So
I see your point. Yeah, it's not necessarily something that you want. The only thing I might, like you said, the Metamorph might be worth, because it does keep your count up for your Opal. And also the Imposter Mech could be a thing like that too, but yeah, it doesn't seem necessary. It was just a thing that I thought of while we were talking here.
There's no wrong way to build this. There are wrong cards to leave out, yeah. But there are no wrong cards to add.
Speaking of wrong cards to leave out, let's move into combo lines, because the rest of my questions kind of are more subjective, I guess. So yeah, like combo lines. So we already know you want to have Stellar Lee on the battlefield as early as possible. Sure. Usually, you want to either have, you know, some sort of protection in your hand or a defense grid to protect yourself if you can. If not, well, you can just try to jam it over the top. We've already talked about you can do shit on instant speed.
Go for it.
You did describe dramatic reversal, how that can potentially win, though you can be more specific now if you like. But then there are a number of other kind of weird random cards that you don't really see played in this format that just happen to do a thing here. So first one, the one that we saw you win the most with, or I've seen you win the most with, and also I know a couple other people that are playing this deck, and they've also beat me with this particular card. It's Twisted Fealty. So it's a 2 generic and a red sorcery. It says gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap that creature. It gets haste until end of turn. Then you create a Wicked Roll token attached to up to one target creature. And basically that's an enchantment aura that gives the creature +1/+1. And if it's removed, everybody, all your opponents lose a life. And rolls also have the weird clause that if you have a roll on a creature and then you try to put another roll on it, the first roll is removed. So you can see where you can already repeat this to kill the table. But funny enough, because this card is from Wilds of Eldraine, which was last year fall-ish, so like 6 months ago maybe, it was clearly a mutiny effect or whatever the fuck they call them, where you steal someone else's creature and use it, and then you probably put the Wicked Roll on one of your creatures just for funsies, and then this card comes along and breaks the fuck out of it. So explain that combo. Again, we've already set it up. You've got your commander, you've got maybe protection, whatever, you've got mana to do the thing. Just what is the combo line?
Yep, so the combo line is as long as it is your third spell or you've cast three other spells prior to casting it, you cast
two other spells, right? Because that card is
two cards, then this. As long as it is your third. Yep, it is your third. And if you've cast three before it, that's fine too. You just have to have cast at least two cards before you cast it. If it's your third or fourth or fifth or 12th, fine. Right. So what it is, you cast it, target literally any creature on the battlefield. It doesn't truthfully matter. And then with it on the stack, you tap Stella Lee, the wild card, to copy the Twisted Fealty, however you say it. The copy targets Stella Lee. When the copy resolves, it untaps Stella Lee. It puts a Wicked Roll on Stella Lee. With the original still on the stack, you then tap Stella Lee to copy the original on the stack and repeat. So each time you're untapping Stella Lee, putting a new Wicked Roll on Stella Lee, causing the previous one to fall off, hit the graveyard, and each opponent loses a life each time does that. You do that until they are dead. Now it does. That is another little slight weakness we didn't really talk about, which is also a card I've run into less lately, is Dothi Voidwalker, because this has to hit the grave.
I brought Dothi up earlier, but yeah, and other exile effects, but yes.
Yeah, so they have to find a way to kill the Dothi if you're going for that route. But the nice thing about this, and this has been weirdly relevant in games, because you can attempt to win relatively early with this deck, and a lot of times a relatively early cast One Ring can stop some weird shenanigans for this. This doesn't care because it is a loss of life to each opponent, doesn't target. So this does kill your opponents even if they have the One Ring protection, which is nice. Yeah, you wear out the back of the sleeve, tapping and untapping Stella Lee, copying that spell until your opponents have all perished.
You'll notice a pattern here is that everything that does a thing that wins the game untaps Stella Lee.
Yep, so Dramatic Reversal, same kind of thing. You have to have at least one mana rock on the battlefield that can produce a mana of any color or one color or whatever. Tap Stella Lee with the Dramatic Reversal on the stack, copy it, untap her and the other thing, create infinite mana. If you happen to have the One Ring in the battlefield, you can also then tap it and untap it each time at each iteration, draw your deck. Once you've created infinite mana, you have to have a payoff. That's the one tricky thing. It's not just Stella Lee, Dramatic Reversal win. You need another payoff, whether that's a tutor, like I said, the One Ring. It could be there's a split card expansion Explosion. That one's an interesting one. So it's blue-blue or blue-red hybrid expansion, instant, copy target, instant or sorcery spell with CMC 4 or less. You can choose new targets for the copy. That side's super relevant. Your opponent tries to cast a Demonic Tutor, Vampiric Tutor, blah, blah, blah. Boom, you fire off with that, you copy it, you steal it at instant speed.
And if it happens to be your third spell, you also can copy with Stella and get a double tutor.
Yep, you can do dumb stuff with that. Or a lot of times you can do that and win on top of it on the stack. It's also weird for that. The Explosion side is where I'm getting to with the infinite mana. It's red, blue, blue, X. Explosion deals X damage to any target. Target player draws X cards. So what you do is you create infinite mana with your Dramatic Reversal and your one mana rock or five mana rocks or whatever, as long as you have one. Then you leave Stella Lee untapped. You let the original Dramatic Reversal resolve. Sink all of this mana that you have produced into Explosion, dealing X damage to target opponent. Choose another opponent to have them draw X cards. Then you tap Stella Lee to copy this on the stack. Have another opponent lose X deal X damage, and another opponent draw X cards. So you can kill potentially four opponents with this one spell.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That did kind of lead me to another question about choice, but you've kind of already answered it, but just for other people who might be thinking the same thing, why Nothassa's Oracle? Because you already presented a couple ways where you could potentially just draw your deck. If you draw your whole deck, you're going to have the outlet that you just described, but you know, maybe it got exiled and you didn't cast it because it was an early Stella trigger and you know, you just let it go to exile. So now it's gone. You could then potentially try your deck and play a Thassa's. Why not?
So Thassa's Oracle is only good in this deck the turn you would attempt to win after drawing your more or less entire library. There are many other cards like Expansion Explosion, like the Twisted Fealty, that also can serve another purpose early in the game. Twisted Fealty, you can cast it early if you need to steal your opponent's Dranith. So then if you have six mana, you cast it, steal your opponent's Dranith, cast your Sully, move to end step, give the damn Dranith back, and you're fine. You've got Sully in play.
I mean, I guess follow-up question, too, if you were also able to just draw your deck, or in the sense of that expansion thing and Stella copy, get two D-tutors, why not dual cast or Twin Flame or Molten Expansion? It is an easy two-card win con. I just find that like I almost always run it in a low-color red deck. But
so, and some players are playing dual caster Twin Flame, dual caster Molten Duplication. Twin Flame is actually,
I just feel like they're both just not dead cards like by themselves, because a dual caster can flop in any counterspell battle. It can do the same thing as expansion and copy a tutor for you. It does a lot of stuff on its own, and then also Twin Flame can just copy your Dockside, make another one, or whatever the case may be.
Twin Flame I considered for a while, then I got smart and came to my senses, and I'll tell you why. So dual caster Twin Flame, sure, it's a great way to win without your commander. That'd be the reason to play it, because you can win without your commander. The problem with Twin Flame specifically in this deck, and with Molten Duplication specifically in this deck, is I play five creatures that aren't my commander, four of which I want to cast, one is a thing I exile to get a red mana. Yeah, otherwise, yeah. I'm not really copying anything, unless, again, I've drawn my deck, and then I have other ways to win that are cheaper, more efficient, and one card instead of multiple cards that also do the thing in the deck. Twin Flame is weirdly better than Molten Duplication in this deck for a strange reason, and it's because Stella Lee does her best Isochron Scepter impression. She also does her best dual caster mage impression. So if you drew your deck, or if you have three spells you've cast, and you have another creature in play, notably not Ragavan or Spellskite, you could cast Twin Flame, paying the Strive cost, so five mana, target Stella Lee and target one of those three creatures that have a power that can attack, that can be copied and not be dead to the legend rule. With the original on the stack, you can tap Stella Lee, copy Twin Flame. The Twin Flame copy would target Stella Lee and the same creature, you know, the Simian Spirit Guide you had to cast, right? Right. The copy would resolve. You would legend rule sack your original tap Stella Lee. You would get a 2/2 token of Simian Spirit Guide that had haste, and a 2/4 Stella Lee that would have haste. You could then copy the original and stack again with Stella Lee, wash, rinse, repeat. Each time you're getting a new untapped Stella Lee token, sacking the tapped one, and a new 2/2 hasty Simian Spirit Guide, right? So you could do it again without dual caster mage and win in this deck. There's just not enough creatures to copy.
I knew the answer before I asked it, but it was more of a, you know, somebody else might be thinking the same thing. Your main thing is you've got two combos that we already talked, or two or three various things that you can do to just win. And then we've already talked about how you have the Brain Freeze Breach combo. So, like, you have a backup already. It's just a thought process of, like, okay, you've already described how during these combos, oh, I can draw my deck. If you can draw your deck, you can Thassa's to win, or you can have a two-card win con, which that's one of the easiest ones, is the Dual Caster Twin Flame. But anyhow, again, I knew that was the answer, but had to ask.
I don't think we've really covered how you can draw the deck. There's three specific cards that we need to cover. That's so Cerulean Wisps is one. It's one blue instant. Target creature becomes blue until end of turn. Untap that creature, draw a card. If this is your third spell, you tap Stella with this on the stack. The copy of it will resolve. Untapping Stella, you draw a card. Wash, rinse, repeat. With the original on the stack, you keep drawing, leaving at least one card in your library, so when the original goes off, you don't draw yourself out and lose. You've got Refocus is the two mana one. It's one blue and one, untap target creature, draw a card. And then you have Twitch is the three mana one. It's one blue and two, may tap or untap target artifact, creature, or land, draw a card. So that one, if you cast Twitch, you want to target an artifact or a land of yourself, so that way when you get through comboing off, you have an extra mana open. And plus, if you have to tap Stella to copy an early Wheel of Fortune or something, which is weird, but you can cast a Wheel of Fortune, tap Stella to copy it, draw seven when the first copy resolves. If you drew an instant that untaps Stella in the middle of that, you can cast it and go off.
You also notably are running Time Twister, which is smart, because if you do get into one of these loops and somehow your shit gets stopped, or you've already exiled pieces that are critical and you just don't have any more, you can now Time Twister everything back into your deck because maybe your Breach is gone and you don't have the ability to get them out of your graveyard. So
I also play Finale of Promise so I can cast Twisted Fealty from the grave with Finale of Promise is another way to kind of get it back and win over the top. Underworld Breach is a really interesting one with Brain Freeze in this. So if you Breach and Brain Freeze, for those that don't know how it works, you target yourself with the Brain Freeze, mill a bunch of cards. All you have to do is cast your Lion's Eye Diamond, stack it, produce three red, cast your Twisted Fealty from the grave, targeting Stella, and go ham. So there you go. You can win that way.
All of this was leading me to another question where I was going to ask why you weren't playing Final Fortune, but I see it in the list. So you are on Final Fortune. Yeah. You're not on any of the other extra turn spells, which I understand because they're all fucking expensive and you're trying to keep a low curve. But I guess the question would be, instead of why aren't you on it, why are you on it? Because, again, most of the things that you've already described, it's all going to happen on your turn. Why would you need a Final Fortune to take another turn outside of you cast the thing and it got countered and maybe you have Breach in your hand or you've got a gamble to where you could tutor for the Breach or whatever. I can see scenarios why you would want it, but like, what was your reasoning?
So the biggest reason I want it is, one, it's great counter bait if it's your second card. That is just fact, because people are going to be like, whoops, got to get that. But it's there mostly because you can, if you see a window of opportunity, you know, you're playing against three opponents, right? Your next opponent in turn order taps out, the opponent after them casts their Ad Nauz, their opponent before you fights the Ad Nauz, and you're like, okay, they're all tapped out. I've seen them expand a whole crap ton of interaction. I've got Stella Lee in play and I've got a card in hand or whatever I need. I'll jam Final Fortune and just go. It's just looking for your window to like steal a turn in between players' turns.
Right.
It's also there because it is a bad way to give Stella Lee like a pseudo haste. If you have to cast her for three and then something phenomenally bad has happened. Adranith came out on turn one and it's now we're able to produce five mana and Adranith finally dies. And I go to my turn, I can cast Stella Lee, cast Final Fortune, and go to untap, and then she will not be summoning sick anymore, so.
That makes sense. Then the only issue is running into any sort of thing that stops you, and then you just lose the game, but, you know, risk it for the biscuit. I also notably wanted to point it out, because we were talking about tutors earlier. You have Gamble for whatever the fuck you want, but sometimes it's a red in Tomb, which sucks, but you do have Breach, so maybe you get it back for later. Sure. Otherwise, you've got Personal Tutor, Merchant Scroll, Solve the Equation, Mystical Tutor, all which just get spells, but you're a spell heavy deck, also so that makes sense. And that's the one I was going to bring up, is that you also have Muddle, which is, I think, should be in every blue deck. I am a big champion for this spell because it's a 2-mana counter spell, instant or sorcery. So it is limited, but 90% of the time, that's what you want it for. But it also has Transmute 1 and 2 blue. You discard it and tutor up anything that's a 2-drop, so it can get your Underworld Breach, Brain Freeze, Rift, Reversal, Final Fortune.
And this deck, it can get Refocus, which is one of our huge combo pieces to then draw our deck and go nuts.
And then also it can get your Dockside. It can get your Spell Sky to protect yourself. It can get your Defense Grid to protect yourself. It can get a 2-drop Mana Rock if you need it because you're going to Dramatic Reversal and you need the Arcane Signet, whatever the case. So that's a big strength, I would say, in the list.
It can get a Shatter Skull Smashing in this deck, which can be a land, which is funny, but anyway.
All right, so I have a couple more questions just to round this out. You have 22 cards on considering and 8 on your sideboard. Are those cards that you've already tried and cut, or are they there for future testing because you're trying to shore up weaknesses?
A lot of the times when I'm building my list, if you're looking at my deck list, considering cards are either cards that I've had in the list and cut because I decided they weren't holding their weight, or they're cards that I'm just like Gale the Waterdeep Prodigy I put into considering because I thought maybe someday I'll try it. If it goes more mid-rangey, if the deck changes.
We've already said like maybe because we're going to get one of those rock, paper, scissors shifts and stacks becomes a little more relevant again. Maybe you make some of these changes.
For sure. And that's where the pirate you mentioned earlier is probably going to go there. Sideboard is usually cards I'm actively testing.
I don't hate Fury, being able to evoke it to do 4 damage to a big butt thing or kill a Adranith and a 1-drop on top, you know, just whatever.
It was in the list originally, but I ended up cutting it for Pyrokinesis because I like the instant speed. Pyrokinesis is sometimes just nice. You know, if I want to kill an opponent's Ranger Captain on their turn and untap, it's pretty nice.
If Fury doesn't have Flash. I didn't realize. I thought all of them had Flash.
How much better. Yeah. It only doesn't, I believe.
That's shit. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, pyrokinesis obviously better. I just assumed it had flash. Now I'm looking at it. It doesn't. Yeah, I wish because, it I mean, that's I why we play the white one and endurance and yada yada, because they are a gotcha moment, and it's an invoke, mm-hmm. so it's a free spell.
So these are cards I'm actively testing if they're in my sideboard, and they're, you know, one-for-one card slot changes that I'm just trying out.
I do see one here that I would like to bring up, not on the sideboard, but on your considering. I'm really high on, and we were talking about why you're not playing clones and things, so the same reasoning applies here, but it's Curse Mirror. It's the artifact that's a 2 and a red. It comes in untapped. It taps for a red, but it also enters the battlefield as a copy of any creature and has haste, so you can copy anything and use it right away if it's an activated ability, blah, blah, blah. And then it's not like the copy where it just stays the thing. You can copy a Dockside with this, get the benefit of it being a Dockside, and then later just have a mana rock, which I love. I think Curse Mirror is amazing. I play it in most decks that are red. Maybe that and Phyrexian Metamorph might be like the two I might consider.
I had Curse Mirror in my original list and ended up cutting it just because I found in testing it wasn't doing enough of what I wanted it to do.
Sure.
It's definitely a good card, and it's definitely one that could come back in the list at some point. But yeah, it was in my initial list, and I wasn't having enough of a reason to play it because most of my combo wins are not creature-oriented, so I'm counting on my opponents to have something relevant. Right. And a lot of times, I'm trying to go fast enough where I don't want to have to try and play around what they're doing.
And it is 3 mana, so it's not like a fast mana rock, which does kind of suck. Even though I love it, it does have that weakness. There's 2 more here that I want to touch on before we move to the next question, and that's Misdirection. Obviously, you're on Deflecting Swat, but it is another Deflecting Swat, so to speak. I mean, Deflecting Swat requires your commander to be on the field for it to be free. This requires you to exile a blue card from your hand for it to be free, but it's the same sort of effect. And then also Submerge, but I already know what your reasoning is, and that's that green isn't getting as much play as it has been. It's kind of fallen out of favor a bit. So if an opponent controls a forest and you control an island, you can pay it for free and just put a creature on top of its own library. It is a temporary fix, but again, gets a Draenith or something out of your way so you can do what you want to do. And it's a great card. I run it in a lot of decks, but green has kind of... It's not that it's awful, but like a few years back, it was like white was the worst color, red was just above it, green was up in the top 3, and blue and black were the best. And now it's like, well, blue and black and red and fuck, white is making an argument for being one of the best. Esper is in the best place it's been since I've been playing CDH, to be honest. But again, this is always good, man. Green has kind of fallen out of favor a bit. So that's exactly
why I don't play that, because of lack of forest. Hell, half the time anymore, even if you play an opponent with green, they're not even getting forests in play. They're getting, I can't even think what they're called. Like if you have 3 opponents or 2 opponents, it comes into play untapped or blah, 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 blah. So half the time they're producing green with a City of Brass or something else because the green is just a splash. So they're not even tutoring their green lands. So it's,
Unless you're playing against Selvala or another mono green deck, and Selvala is really the most prominent.
I still do see a really decent number of Kinnan decks that I'll run into. And that'd be the only reason to play it, but I don't think one deck is a high enough share of the meta to worry about it. So that's that one. Misdirection, it can't stop a Bowmaster from being cast and entering the battlefield and doing anything. If it was change the target of target spell or ability single target, it'd have a hell of a lot more chance of making the list.
It's also 5 CMC as opposed to 3. You can hard cast a Deflecting Swat a lot easier. So yeah, makes sense, they're cards that I see a lot, so I just thought I'd ask.
You need your reactive spells to be as broad as possible. You need them to try and catch as much crap as possible. So being able to counter a Draenith, counter a Bowmaster is more important than to being able to just redirect a counter spell, basically.
So is this something that you might plan on trying to maybe submit to the database? Or if nothing else, something that you might... Because I've looked at a number of your lists, and a lot of times it's just like, these are the combos, and that's all you write. Maybe a more fleshed out primer. Something to kind of, put your mark on the format, provide more information for people, that sort of thing.
I'll probably do a little more in-depth primer on this than I would some, because I am really enjoying the hell out of playing it.
I mean, to be fair, we kind of just did the primer, so I guess you could just put this video on the fucking thing.
I'll link this video in the comments, everybody, so you'll see it again.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I have never submitted anything to the decklist database. I probably won't this one either. It's a great resource, but it is what it is.
Obviously, this is kind of answering a lot of the questions and whatever, but we're not going over every single card, and there may be more things you would extrapolate on if you were writing it down. I like a good primer. Obviously, I haven't written one for every deck I have, but I've got a good dozen, maybe two dozen primers that are pretty well fleshed out. And I think that that helps people who may look at the commander and go, I like this, and then search and then come across your list. Everything that we talked about today, if you looked at this on paper, again, Twisted Fealty, I look at that on paper and I go, okay, I steal somebody's thing. Yeah. You don't even know that that is a winning card and something you should be looking for or mulliganing for or tutoring for without somebody telling you that if you haven't played the deck. And you're eloquent enough that I think you could probably get a pretty good primer. Last final question, and then I'll let you have any closing final thoughts. But where does this deck rank among your favorites in recent memory? I know you have a fuck ton of decks, so I'm not going to try and have you say, like, this is my 25th favorite deck out of 3,000. But, you know, out of the last, I don't know, 6 months to a year, out of the decks that you've built, be it for our streams or just for fun, whatever the case may be, like, where does this rank? Is this kind of like one of your favorites? Is it kind of middling? Like, where are you at?
It's, if not my favorite, it's easily in the top four. So, full disclosure, I was going to play in a CDH tournament last weekend. I was late to sign up. It capped. Stuff happens. Life goes on. But yeah, so this is actually a deck I'm looking to play in tournament. I let a friend borrow Talion that I'd been playing in tournaments instead. I would say this, Talion, Borborygmos, and Fibblethip, and Unctus are probably my four favorite of the last hour long that's been.
Oh, but really? Not the Octopus Boy?
Forget about Marvo. Do I love Marvo?
I mean, that's five. That's your top five right there.
This is maybe number two. I love me some Borborygmos and Fibblethip just because it's weird as hell. So far, this is the only one that I'm, from my local group that I play against CDH, that they have jokingly bantered in our little group chats that saying, oh, I just heard that Stella Lee is instant banned. So yeah. Sad. So she's definitely catching some hate, let me tell you.
I mean, me too. I already said, if I play against you, I'm playing stacks. That's all there is to it. You can out-turbo it to some degree, but it's really dependent on your mulligans. It's dependent on your seating position. From my limited experience of playing against it, it can compete with the fastest decks in the format. I don't know about Rog'Sai, because I've never played that or played against it. It's supposed to be the fastest deck. I know Cody was up there as being one of the fastest Nos decks, too. I don't know if it competes with both of those like evenly, but it's right up there. And it's surprising for being Izzet too, because like prior to this, like Izzet has always been kind of a, yes, you have counter spells, yes, you have some removal, yes, you have some tutors, you have a little bit of everything, but like it's always been very dependent on, well, I guess this is too. It's always very dependent on the commander. You need your Joy Route to do your eggs to draw shit, or you need your Malcolm and your Kedis out to make all the treasures. Or, like, you know,
combo win with a bad aura, you know.
Yeah, right, or you need whatever dumb hope you get it tutor like gamble to get your Glenhorn Buccaneer to win with the Malcolm. But again, not great, not efficient, not as fast. I'd argue probably the best is a deck in the format. Zilliancy
is another deck that is the top is a deck.
We don't talk about that around here though.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a good Karkin Sakashima pilot, God bless you. Keep playing it. Keep showing the ones that aren't how to do it. The beauty of this one is the winning turn, you're not going to be flipping 5 billion coins or, you know, whatever.
And it's also one of those things where you're just like, okay, this happens. Do I win? And if nobody has a response, you just win. And if you're in a tournament setting, you can explain it. And yeah, I guess you could play it out, but it's literally just, okay, I pick up my deck. Any responses? I win. Done. You know, it's not that whole, oh, I have to see if this resolves or it goes to my hand, or, you know, with the Joyras and things where it's like, okay, I play all these things, I'm playing solitaire for 15 minutes and then I don't get to a win, yada yada. And I mean, Adnaz and some of the other strategies like that have those same issues where you can take a lot of time being in the tank on Adnaz because you've drawn 20 cards and you consider, do I want to draw one more, then you get to the point where you stop, you put all those cards in your hand and you go, fuck, what do I do? And then trying to work your way through it because you have so many options, and most decks have a number of winning lines, so it's just finding where your line is. But I feel like if you have any sort of practice, like I can run through an Adnaz and go into a Final Fortune or whatever pretty quickly. Most people can. Although, this is still just going to be faster because you're just like, okay, this happens, I win. Or you get stopped. And that's all there is to it. The only thing that would make it better, honestly, to me, is if it had either black or white. If it was Jeskai, you would get all your silence effects, plus the extra draw effects, plus the extra to do hate bears, whatever. If it was black, you get all the best tutors. So it would just be that much faster to get your wins.
This is a weird one where the black actually would not help it as much as the white, I don't think. Because if you cast Personal Tutor to find Twisted Fealty, or if you cast Mystical Tutor to find Twisted Fealty or one of the, you know, Cerulean Wisps, blah, 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 blah. If it's your first spell, puts it on top of your library. You cast another spell, it then exiles it, and then wada boom, you've got it in exile. You can cast it with Stella Lee as your third spell and wins. So that's why I definitely think white with like a Grand Abolisher and a Silence. If you could give me a Silence and a Grand Abolisher, oh boy, it'd be great.
I guess you could also be running the Malevolent Hermit.
You could also run Conqueror's Flail. There's some other stuff I could be trying. But
Closing thoughts. I mean, I have no more questions for you. I think the deck's great. I have enjoyed talking about it. I think that, again, it's going to show some results in tournaments and whatnot. And if nothing else, it's going to wreck a lot of LGSs and other things because people are going to not know what's happening. And once they figure out what's happening, the only answers are play more stacks. And some people don't want to do that. So, I mean, any closing thoughts before we wrap it up?
The only thing I would say, kudos to Wizards of the Coast for exploring weird other avenues, taking cards that, you know, you wouldn't see otherwise and making them relevant again because of cards that are printed like this. And also, as far as pre-cons go, man, the pre-con for this one is just a total banger. It's great. You could add, we were talking before the podcast, you could probably add 10 cards to the pre-con and put up a decent showing in a CDH pod, which is pretty nuts. Got a good design space, and let's keep cranking up the power of those pre-cons so that we can just keep having fun and doing weird shit.
Okay, well, that pretty much wraps things up here. Again, I will add links to the deck list and to the video where Kirk won a bunch, and Kirk's probably going to put this on his deck list so that you can see this if you want to know more. Maybe he'll write a primer, maybe not. Otherwise, yeah, thanks for bringing the list, building the list, playing the list, making me a believer, and that's really it. We'll be back in a while, whenever. We're not really on any sort of set schedule. We try to be bi-weekly, but, you know, life happens. So otherwise, you guys have a good evening, rest of your day, whatever the case may be. Don't forget, like, comment, subscribe. Comments especially. I like having some feedback from the audience so that we can talk about it at the beginning of shows. We did it for a while, but we've not really had much for a while. So, again, if you like the deck, have any comments, maybe cards you might suggest, things that maybe Kirk didn't think about, let us know, and we'll get back to you in a future episode.
Also, if there's a deck you've seen us play on the channel or you've seen out there that you know we've played before or that you're just interested in, let us know. You know, we can definitely do more deck decks if anyone wants to hear them.
I think one that I'd really like to talk about in the future soonish is Xur, just because of how much of a resurgence he's had because of the printing of cards in Esper that are fucking busted and good in the last like year or so. Yeah, obviously we're still going to keep with the set reviews, and we still have that one last listicle thing for the lands, so I've already got show notes ready to go. We just got to knock it out. So again, thank you all for watching and or listening if you're on Spotify, and we'll see you guys soon. Have a good day, evening, night, month, week, year, eternity. See ya.
Take care.